banger of a show for you here today as Andy Behrens and Tara Roberts join me to preview the week two slate. We have tons of pressing questions that Andy wants us to get to, including the Falcons. I mean, just an offense littered with questions at this point. Also, the Rams. Is there anyone else in this passing game we can trust beyond Cooper Kupp? In the second half of the show, Tara Roberts jumps on to pick on the Carolina Panthers with several sleepers on the LA Chargers and gives you a couple of players you might need to worry about in your lineup if you're considering trusting them. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Friday, September 13th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And whether you're superstitious or not, it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And it's not an unlucky day because I am lucky enough to be joined by the one, the only Andy Behrens to do just that. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
I am thrilled to be here. I'll tell you, I've had a lot of little like, the season is finally back moments. I think the biggest one for me so far was waking up early on Wednesday after waivers cleared and being just crestfallen when I didn't get, you know, some bad players, right? Like, oh man, I didn't get Jeff Wilson. Oh, I didn't get Alec Pierce. Like, that's when the season is finally back.
Yeah, for me, it's waking up on Wednesday and being like, damn it, I forgot to put a claim. I forgot to do waivers in this league. Forgot to do it in this league. Honestly, though, Andy, it wasn't that great of a waiver week. It was a pretty disappointing, like, I don't know, who are there that many difference makers. Last year, you know, we had, and maybe this ages really poorly, but last year we had Puka Nacua and Kyron Williams on the waiver wire in week one. This year, I don't really see any big difference makers. So I think you'll be okay that you didn't get Jeff Wilson, which, by the way, again, talk about aging poorly. We're discussing Jeff Wilson, who plays on Thursday night. This show comes out Friday. So I don't know. Maybe it does look pretty bad that you didn't get Jeff Wilson.
Yeah, it may. I mean, I wasn't in a lot of leagues where like J.K. Dobbins was actually available, but he might be a thing. But you're right. Like comparing it to last year is not fair at all, because last year you could build an entire like league winning roster from what was on waivers after week one. Right. It was Puka. It was Kyron. It was Jordan Love. It was Rashee Rice. It was everybody. It was Brandon Aubrey. Like you could literally go position by position and find dudes who were like at or near the top of the spot for the rest of the season.
I admire your ability to somehow bring up Brandon Aubrey in every piece of audio and video content that we do here at Yahoo Fantasy. All right, let's move into the week two preview show. If you were with us last week, you know how this is going to go. If you're new, welcome. Appreciate you. Shout out to you. You're officially my favorite person on planet Earth, this side of my wife. All right, so this is how this goes. In the second half of the show, Tara Roberts is going to join me, and she's going to talk about the make or break players that could determine the outcome of your fantasy matchups. We're also going to give you the keys to winning each week, which is pretty much going to be a player that you should probably break some ties in favor of getting into your running back, wide receiver, flex, tight end, whatever spot that we have. But in this first half of the show, the great Andy Behrens graces us with his presence. And this week, he's going to provide us with three burning fantasy questions that he wants answered and three matchups that deserve your attention. In other words, deserve sort of a deep dive, and probably, again, is going to hold sort of the skeleton key to winning in fantasy football. No pressure, Andy Behrens. Let's start with three of those fantasy questions that you want answered. And a lot of these are pressing topics that we've been discussing all week, but we're going to try to be hyper-focused on what do we do about these players in week two, starting with the Falcons in a Monday night matchup. What is your burning question for the Atlanta Falcons?
Yeah, the burning question for me is whether Kirk Cousins can actually exploit, like this version of Kirk Cousins can exploit a pretty exploitable matchup. And I almost actually put this game, the Atlanta Eagles game, into my, like, you know, games that I thought deserved your attention. But I actually really think most of the conversation is about Cousins. And yeah, we don't have to go down the road again of talking about his obvious physical limitations. I think that was the only reasonable conclusion to draw from opening week, is that he's he's not exactly right. He's as you know, you have mentioned, he's on a very different recovery timeline from the Achilles than Aaron Rodgers. He's a couple months behind him. Maybe it's fine that he can't like really plant and drive off that leg. Clearly he wasn't moving particularly well in the pocket. There are some things that he just can't do, but I will also say like, I think his arm is fine. It's not like he was throwing a bunch of wobblers against the Steelers. And like, I felt like a couple things were true simultaneously in that game. And one, of course, is that, you know, that was not like the normal version of Kirk Cousins. That's a concern. But also, they could have won that game, probably should have won that game. And for a long stretch of that game, it looked good. It looked fine. They're like, upon like, I rewatched that thing on Monday, and there is a very specific moment where that game flips, right? Like they, Atlanta has the ball in the third quarter. They are driving. They're like well within Pittsburgh territory. It's their first drive of the third quarter. They're going to score. They're already up. Kirk threw a touchdown pass at the end of the first half. Like things are going well. Bijan can't be stopped. And this, so they're either going to go up like 4 points or 8 points. Like it looks good. And then there's a shotgun snap to Kirk. There's a motion man. The ball hits the guy who's in motion. I think it was Mykole Pruitt, and TJ Watt falls on it. And I'm not sure that Atlanta gained 20 yards of offense for the remainder of the game. It was just a wild hinge point in the game. And that wasn't all on Kirk either, right? Like, ill-timed penalties. They got off schedule. I don't think this version of Kirk Cousins can win. If they fall off schedule, or if he ends up in a bunch of like second and longs, that doesn't feel like a thing. But like, man, this Eagles defense, you know, we saw the Packers get to him a little bit in week one. They were a matchup that we just aggressively picked on all last season. I know they have some brand name players on defense, but it was just terrible pass defense. So like, if this were the 2023 healthy version of Kirk Cousins facing the 2023 Philadelphia Eagles, Kirk would be like the QB5 on the week. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious as to what it looks like this week, because I know there's a lot of doom and gloom about him, and are they even starting the right quarterback? But I don't know, when it worked in week one, it looked fine to me. Like I don't think it's quite as bad as maybe the national narrative would suggest.
You have a little bit of a rosier feeling about this game than I do, and just about the Falcons in general. But your points are well taken that this did look like, and I keep coming back to, I wish that some of these teams that were basically brand new, and really no team is more brand new than the Falcons, new offense, new head coach, new quarterback, all of the basically on-field pivot points, like where things trickle down from, those three things, play caller, head coach, and quarterback. That's all brand new. I wish these teams would play a little more in the preseason so that they don't come out and look sloppy as hell in week one. Because you're right, beyond just the fact that I have structural concerns of the way they lined up, and you know, no snaps out of play action, one snap under center, which was a spike, by the way. Like, wasn't even like a, oh, let's get under center and take a shot.
He was also under center for like a jet sweep. I think that was it. Yeah.
So it's just, besides all that stuff, you're also right that kind of just the operations of the offense didn't look smooth. You know, that play, I think, that bounced off, I think it's actually, might have been Charlie Warner, the tight end, or who cares, whatever. The snap that bounces off of him, you know, Kirk's like kind of motioning him over here, and he's like kind of telling him to get over there, and all the whole thing, like, it felt a little bit messy. From that regard, some of the assignments from the offensive line I thought were messy as well. Some protection errors and things like that. That stuff is maybe fixable as time goes on. But that also brings me back to my biggest problem with the offense right now, which is just, if they're going to play what they like, my instinct, I'll just tell you, to spoiler alert, my instinct is to say that, can this version of Kirk Cousins exploit an exploitable matchup? No. What I watched in week one, my initial read on this is no, he cannot, because I don't think that they've got a shot in that shotgun offense with a quarterback that can't move. And it's just because it's so antithetical to what we have known of Kirk Cousins forever. I mean, even to the point that, you know, Chase Daniel, former backup NFL quarterback, is breaking down on FS1, like how his stance is different, how he's doing that, as he called it, the Peyton Manning straddle stance, as opposed to what he's always done with his I can't remember which foot forward. But basically that, it just, again, it's all brand new stuff for Kirk Cousins. My concern there is just when you have no margin for error, the typical sloppiness of a new team because of the way you're playing, I just feel like it is very doom and gloomy. But that's me. You sound a little bit more rosier than I am.
Yeah. And I'm not even thinking of, I don't feel particularly rosy about it. I just also don't think that the entire offense is doomed all season necessarily. And I thought there were some like long stretches of the game against the Steelers where the offense was kind of humming a little bit and everything was working. Mm-hmm. And then they just got doomed by, something that is probably the byproduct of, not being on the field together and everybody being new. I think that's a very real thing. All kinds of concerns about Kirk Cousins, but I'm not even like thinking about starting him this week.
Sure.
But man, we took, people took Kyle Pitts and Drake London in spots where you can't not play them. I thought Robinson looked great, but is this actually going to be an offense that throws the ball 35 times a game ever? Are they going to throw downfield ever? They did a little bit against the Steelers, but not a lot. I think the intended air yards for Kirk Cousins was in the fives, right? It wasn't anything impressive. So that is a real concern. And of course, again, last year facing the Eagles, it's a gift. We would have said Drake London is like a top 10 receiver, and we would have said you can't bench Kyle Pitts. And now, I don't know, maybe all of that's on the table, but it is a big open question. And I do still think but probably this version of Atlanta, having not played together in the preseason and with everybody new, they are probably going to fall off schedule, and they are going to have some killer penalties, and they are just going to have some gaffes that come with a lack of familiarity and a little bit of rust. And, Kirk, of course, is just like, he's just a little bit off rhythm in addition to being physically compromised. So it's probably not going to go well, but he's just connected to too many valuable skill players that we have to care.
Totally have to care. I think you're going to end up playing Drake London. I think you probably should, because the frustrating part about going back and actually just focusing just on Drake London for reception perception charting him, like the usage for him, I think, was spot on. In Arthur Smith's offense, he was just this static X receiver outside on the line of scrimmage. He took more snaps off the line than on the line. He was used plenty in the slot. He was moved around. Other players were moved around to gain leverage on the coverage for Drake London. I just think that Kirk was so A, rattled, and B, late on a lot of these reads, because I don't think he's confident in his lower body right now, that once, even if those windows were open up in zone, they closed pretty quickly. I think you could see that on at least one of the interceptions. So I'm pretty concerned about that, but I do think you're probably playing like Drake London and Kyle Pitts and seeing what happens, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine a scenario where you don't. I could imagine you've got Kyle Pitts and you added Isaiah Likely and you're like, let's just see how this goes for Atlanta for a little while. Yeah. I can imagine that, but I can't imagine seriously sitting Drake London. It's more a question of whether, this team is doomed because it invested in Atlanta, or or I can find any reason to be hopeful moving forward.
Yeah, there's a very good chance that the Kirk Cousins stuff is a huge week one overreaction. I also think there's a chance that after a game against the Eagles and then the Chiefs, we are, getting close on Penix watch way earlier than I ever thought. Yeah. So I feel like this situation could go either way, which I didn't think that was going to happen coming out of week one. I also didn't think there was going to be this much panic about a certain rookie wide receiver coming out of week one who was taken fourth overall in the NFL draft and was taken extremely high in fantasy drafts. Andy, talk to me about your second burning fantasy question.
Yeah, my second burning fantasy question was whether Marvin Harrison is actually going to be in the game plan for Arizona this week. And I guess I'll start with the things that I wouldn't be particularly panicky about. And I see some fantasy people and some NFL folks like victory lapping a little bit about Marvin Harrison Jr.'s very quiet debut. And I see people pointing out that I think his top tracked speed in that game was like 16 some miles an hour or whatever. And people are calling him slow. Like We have like on-field tracking from his college career, and we know that that guy is pretty fast. The best version of Marvin Harrison Jr., pretty fast guy, like recorded a top speed of over 22 miles an hour at Ohio State. So I don't think this is a situation where he's like literally not physically or athletically at the level that he needs to be. I don't think that was the problem. I do think it was really alarming that he was almost never the first read upon like rewatching this game. I just didn't see a lot of plays where, like, I don't know, he was being used to like clear out space. I just didn't see a lot of like the Cardinals proactively trying to get the ball to, you know, the top pick, their top pick in the draft, and somebody who is theoretically supposed to sort of define the next, I don't know, 10 years of passing offense for Arizona. That was a little alarming to me. And then they didn't, you know, even if there were things that were being done schematically to prevent Marvin from getting the ball, like how about a little jet motion? How about a wide receiver screen? Yeah. How about we do some things that just give him some layups so we can put the ball in his hands? And they didn't do any of that. So that was a real concern for me. I guess the general concern here is that, you know, is the, and you know, the other side, I know that, I know that Wilson caught a touchdown, but he didn't do anything else. So like the fact that we're not getting the ball or even necessarily trying to get the ball to like our outside receivers, is that a feature and not a bug in this offense? And if it's a feature, it's a huge problem. And there's no hope for, your Marvin Harrison shares wherever you drafted him. But I just, you know, I'm stuck on the fact that I think he's a really good player and a really good receiver. And even if I were somebody who was like, oh yeah, you can't take him in redraft, it's too risky, the price is too high and all that, I don't think I would be victory lapping necessarily after 1 week, but man, I also don't like what I saw just from a schematic standpoint.
Yeah, I really don't like what I saw from a schematic standpoint. And I think it's also fair to say I don't like what I saw from Marvin Harrison Jr. either. I don't think he separated well against press. That was the thing that was shocking, was, you know, it wasn't a ton of reps against press coverage, but even just him getting off the line of scrimmage was like, I expected him to walk in there and be a pro's pro from day one, and he looked like a regular old rookie receiver, which I guess that is totally okay. You know, even just because his name is Marvin Harrison Jr. and he's been a super productive player in college, and you know, I'm not like alone in this opinion. I thought he was one of the best receiver prospects of the last 4 years. Totally, totally fair for him to still have an adjustment to NFL game speed and all of these things. So, you know, it was a very aggressive move to take him, you know, in round two of fantasy drafts, or even if, you know, early round two, sometimes end of round one for people on certain platforms. That was aggressive. You had to know it was aggressive. And part of me also thinks there's a chance that we get a few months here and everybody's like, remember when we freaked out about Marvin Harrison's week one debut? I still feel like that is the most likely outcome here, but I think he has to play better. And I also think you're so right from a schematic standpoint. We've got to see better from this offense, which I was high on how they played last year from a structure and design perspective. I like what Petzing did, but Harrison, again, talk about a player who was almost exclusively lined up on the line of scrimmage, no motion. He's running a lot of his most commonly run route was a curl route, hook route, whatever you want to call it, against a cover two defense like Buffalo. You're drawn dead there. You're never going to get him the ball. You got to get more, more routes running horizontally where he can build up some speed, because I don't think he is freak show fast or anything like that, but he certainly can have that build up speed. So you got to see different usage. You got to just see him play better. And then I think he will get more first read targets too, because there's definitely a part of me that thinks like, man, yeah, they didn't design anything for the fourth overall pick in the draft. Why didn't they design anything for the fourth overall pick in the draft? Like, that makes me a little nervous from a Marvin Harrison perspective, honestly, not even just a Cardinals coaching staff perspective. But I don't know, Andy, I guess bottom line is, you know, it's a great matchup against the Rams secondary.
Yes. Yeah.
What are we hoping to see here beyond just like different usage and obviously more first read targets?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the biggest thing by far for me is a batch of first read targets. I want to see the team proactively try to get the ball to the number four overall pick of the draft like that. I mean, it just floored me that he was not a decoy, but just very much in the supporting role in week one. And I don't think that team has another guy in the receiving core like him. I want to see Kyler willing and aggressive about getting the ball downfield, getting the ball near the boundary. We just didn't see a lot. And again, maybe that's just all week one game plan, and we're going to see a lot of different versions of Kyler this year. Just not a lot of involvement from the outside receivers at all. And again, if that continues, it's a terrible situation for Marvin. And I this isn't this isn't some huge problem I have. I don't have Marvin Harrison Jr. all over the portfolio because I was a little nervous about taking a rookie receiver as high as he was going to go. But I do I've got him in one league, maybe two leagues. But I just found it bewildering that he was barely even part of the game plan in week one.
Yeah, I do think we need to correct a couple of assumptions about the Cardinals offense. They're going to run the ball a lot more, I think, than fantasy drafters assumed. Yeah. So it's going to be a little tough, I think, for Marvin Harrison Jr. and Trey McBride to both be popping off. I did love the usage for Trey McBride in week one. Didn't love how much Dortch was in this offense. I know there are fantasy people who love Greg Dortch, but come on, man. I mean, we don't need six first read targets for Greg Dortch. That's just what I'll say.
I will say they're not even wrong to try to run the ball a lot. James Conner's good. James Conner being really good last year was one of the kind of an under-discussed aspect of the season. He didn't get enough credit, I don't think. And I get it with Trey Benson, but we probably shouldn't be trying to discard James Conner so early. He was a pretty good player.
Final point in your burning questions. Actually, we're going to stay in this game and talk about the receiver room on the other side of the field.
Yeah, this is one of my biggest questions of the week is whether beyond Cooper Kupp, if there's going to be another right answer in the Rams receiving room for however long Puka Nacua is out. And it sounds like that's probably going to be more than 4 weeks. So we're going to have an extended run here in which it's Cooper Kupp and who else? And the candidates are not, it's kind of a rogues gallery, right? It's DeMarcus Robinson, who we saw have a really nice stretch of games late last season with Stafford. It's Colby Parkinson, who's been kind of an afterthought tight end, but was pretty involved everyone was involved in week one because they threw the ball almost 50 times. Tyler Johnson had, popped a little bit in week one, and there's some discussion of him. I don't need to tell you as an Outback Bowl historian that he was responsible while at Minnesota for one of the great Outback Bowl performances of all time against Auburn. It was
big Outback guy. Yeah, sure.
Oh, sure. It was the game that that actually made me get a little bit excessively enthusiastic about Tyler Johnson as he came into the league. It's been a quiet career so far, but he's still out there. So there are some options. They aren't great options, but one of the other options is Cooper Kupp is just going to see 15 targets a game, and he is the wide receiver one moving forward. And there is no other right answer. and I kind of feel like that might actually be it. They might just build the whole thing around a healthy Cooper Kupp for the next month and a half, 2 months, however it is, without Puka Nacua. He saw 21 targets in week one, which just blew away the field. Right, nobody else close to that. So, I mean, it is possible that the answer in the Rams receiving core is just strictly Cooper Kupp. And it's a season that looks just 2021.
Yeah. Well, I would say it looks more 2022, which is the offense is not, that's my concern, is that it's going to be just a bunch of Kupp volume, and the offense is not going to be as prolific as it was in 21. Right. Or even what we saw last year, or certainly the hopes for this year. So I think if we're redrafting today, Kupp is almost certainly a first round pick, if you have Kupp on your team, congratulations. I would still probably rather have guys like AJ Brown and Amon-Ra St. Brown, just because I know Kupp's going to get more targets than those guys every single week, but I think they're just attached to better offenses. But regardless, I still think he's a player you're taking in the first round, especially over some of these running backs and things like that. But I'm with you that I'm not that enthusiastic about the Tyler Johnson. I could be proven wrong about this, but like the Tyler Johnsons of it all. I don't think this does not look like an offense to me that is going to support a bunch of receivers here, like a bunch of ancillary guys. I think Colby Parkinson is going to play a big role. I think he's a sneaky ad at tight end. Maybe even somebody that if you're desperate, you could start in this matchup. But beyond that, I think DeMarcus Robinson had a lot of usage in week one. I've got proof of concept of what his role is as the X receiver in this offense. He's probably the only other guy I'm looking at. Once we get down to this, like the third and fourth receivers here, I need to see this offense consistently function at a really high level, despite offensive line injuries, despite the Puka injury, to really be enthused about these ancillary guys.
Yeah. You know, one thing I hate to hear is people discussing who steps into the, and I know it's a shorthand and people don't mean this, but when people say like step into the Puka Nacua role, that is super disrespectful to Puka Nacua and everything he did last year. Right. Like that was all earned. That wasn't like, that's not just like a pre-existing role where like somebody's automatically going to get 15 targets and go off for 120 yards. That ain't happening.
No, exactly. Yeah, I'm with you on that. So I think from a bottom line perspective, so this should be a high scoring game. It actually opened up 46 point total. It's been bet up to 48. I could see, and look, these are two really bad defenses. So I could definitely see this, though. These are still two offenses kind of trying to find themselves. Didn't look great, or at least didn't look up to potential in week one. I don't know. This is just like, okay, we're digging down deep into the Rams to try to start players. We're digging down deep into the Cardinals to start players. I think we're kind of playing the hits in this one. Hopefully Marvin Harrison Jr. establishes himself as a hit after this week. We'll see. But I think it's Cooper Kupp. I think it's Kyren Williams. I'm trying to not start some ancillary Rams players, but if I have to, I think it's DeMarcus Robinson, and then we're going from there.
Yeah, I agree with that. We're also in a non-bye week, so you don't have to like take a flyer on any of these guys.
Correct. Yes. Let's remember that. We don't have to take flyers on, you know, some of the bottom barrel players of the league just yet. We'll get to that point of the season, but thankfully we're not there.
Can't wait.
We are at the point where we need to take a quick break. Let's take that and then come back on the other side and talk through three matchups that Andy Barron says you need to focus on and deserve your attention in week number two. All right, Andy, let's start off with one of my favorite games of the week, and certainly one of the best fantasy games of the week. You say we got to pay attention to the fighting Baker Mayfields, Tampa Bay going to Detroit to take on the Lions. What do you have your eye on in this matchup?
Yeah, I love everything about this. This is a fun game. It's a playoff rematch. It is a game, you know, there's probably one of those games on the schedule that could provide us with like 60 points, right? This is really a fun one. And the way the Bucs came out was great, obviously in a low degree of difficulty matchup against Washington. And this is a big step up from that. But good game for Baker, a nearly, you know, an almost perfectly clean game from Baker. Mike Evans was great. We don't have a lot of open questions in Tampa Bay's receiving core. I do think that the Rashad White, Bucky Irving thing is interesting. A lot of what we saw from Irving was delivered late in the game, but he was a super buzzy player in preseason. They clearly like him. The coaching staff talks about him. And I think Bucky Irving is going to remain involved. And obviously White is a player who last year, all of his fantasy value was tied to his ability as a receiver. And he's really good. Like he's really good, but he was not an efficient runner. He wasn't a big after contact guy. So there's an opening for somebody to split some early down touches in that backfield, and obviously Irving is pretty talented. So I'm watching that. On the Detroit side, I mean, in addition to, you know, that backfield is going to be an ongoing conversation and has been a conversation since, you know, there's people who are, there's a lot of people in the fantasy industry who are just ready for Jahmyr Gibbs to be like a 400 touch guy, right? And that is just clearly not going to happen with David Montgomery there. So there's ongoing tension. But I think the biggest thing to watch is really what Jameson Williams does for an encore here, because really, like, I mean, 9 targets last week, huge game. Everything, you know, they talked him up so much throughout the summer. They didn't really make a big ad at the wide receiver spot, and then he really popped in week one after giving us a taste in the postseason last year. You know, you look back at like his last 4 or 5 games. There are several in which he's seen like 6 targets, 7 targets, and then real usage in week one. It was good to see. I'm just curious to see where it goes, because if Jameson Williams settles in as somebody who's seeing six or seven targets a game, and I think he can, he's no longer like, I was still thinking of him as like this high variance receiver. He might not be so high variance if he's getting regular volume.
Yeah, I pushed him up in weekly rankings to kind of the George Pickens, Tank Dell zone, which I think that's where he is. And there's going to be some volatility with those players, but they're guys who can affect the game downfield. There are players who are talented. Like Jameson Williams is clearly talented and clearly, I think, dialed in right now, which is really cool to see. He's certainly a player. Like, he's somebody that was a big week one test. It's like, what does he look like in week one? That's going to really inform the way we view him the rest of the season. And what we saw in week one, maybe it ends up being an overreaction, but what we saw in week one is that he's a part of the base offense. He's going to get first read looks. He's going to get schemed up looks. He's going to get looks that aren't just volatile down the field stuff. So yeah, he's somebody I think right now, week two, my lean is that he's in every week wide receiver three, and we're just going to keep rocking and rolling there. Maybe that changes based on week two usage, totally possible. I think the more interesting question there from a rest of season perspective is, okay, if Jameson Williams is that guy, what does it mean for Amon-Ra St. Brown? What does it mean for your guy, Sam Laporta? For Laporta, it's tough. Like, maybe he doesn't return second round value, but I almost don't, and you're the biggest Laporta honk in the world, so I don't really know if I need your biased take on it, but my lean on it is he's going to, even if he doesn't return crazy high value where you took him, he's going to be a starting tight end and he'll be fine. With the St. Brown thing, it's interesting though, because I love Amon-Ra St. Brown. I've been a huge fan of his since his college days. But when you just look at all offseason, people were like, Harmon, why don't you have St. Brown in your tier one dynasty rankings? Why isn't he a tier one receiver? It's like, well, because he doesn't impact the game at every level of the field. Jameson Williams, theoretically, there are things that St. Brown does that Jameson Williams cannot do, won't ever do. And, you know, I think I'm feel comfortable saying that. But there are a lot of ways on the inverse there from a positive perspective that Jameson Williams does impact the game at all three levels. So I'm not saying that Jameson's better than St. Brown or will ever be better than St. Brown, but I do think that if his emergence, if we see it 2 weeks in a row, I'm going to have to start to think about if St. Brown is going to be more of a wide receiver one, but not like a top five guy.
Yeah, I also think there's a world in which Jameson Williams' emergence just makes the offense better.
Totally
and
fair.
There's room for all these guys, right? And that's an overreaction to week one, and maybe that's just me thinking, wow, what if he's really that dude? What if he's really the guy that we saw in his final collegiate season, and he's ready to contribute? Maybe not at the week one level, but at a, you know, hey, this guy is earning 6 to 10 targets a game. And what if the offense is just a little bit better? It gets complicated for guys like Laporta and St. Brown, but at least all those guys operate like in different places. It's a fair question as to whether we're going to see very many games in which Sam Laporta is targeted like 8 times, 10 times. I don't know. I do think that they like him near the goal line. He also never comes off the field. So there are just there are some things tied to Laporta's usage that I think are going to remain steady. And I think the idea of him slipping outside like the top six, the top eight, I doubt it. I don't think anything like that is going to happen. I agree that it gets a little bit dicier for St. Brown, but you know, we could also, this could be such a fun shootout of a game that, you know, St. Brown sees 12 targets and it's a squeaky wheel situation, and Jameson still sees 6 or 7. And I don't know, I'm expecting a lot of points, a lot of yards in this one. I'm not sure that either team can stop the other team.
Yeah, I think the Lions defense is better than previously advertised. And that was a defense I thought was on the rise this year anyway. So that's a good test, them against the Bucs. Mm-hmm. I think we will learn a lot more about both units from that perspective coming out of this week. But for now, I'm with you about most of your analysis here. Start your players. You got a player in this game?
Yeah.
Figure out a way to start them. All right, let's move on to the next game we want to talk about here, Andy. Bengals at Chiefs. This should be a game where we're starting everybody, but after the week one performance by Cincinnati, don't know if we can necessarily feel that way. So what are your burning questions in this game?
Yeah, I don't think, at least on the Chiefs side, I don't actually think there's a ton of burning questions. Are we going to see a little bit more from Xavier Worthy? What does he do for an encore? Because I think he only saw like three touches or three opportunities in week one, and two of them became touchdowns, right? Like, it was a great game for him. That's a, a that's an interesting question. What do we do with him is an interesting question. But I, most of the, like, for the most part, we care about what happens on the Cincinnati side, because that was not great in week one. And not only was it not great in week one, we had this separate, very online conversation going on about, like, people had all the video clips of Joe Burrow, like, flexing his wrist throughout the game. He picked up a water bottle in a weird manner and the internet freaked out. Right. And like, he seemed pretty bemused and, you know, was shrugging off all that stuff. I don't, like, just watching Joe Burrow in week one, seeing a lot of clips of him from camp, I have no reason to think that there's an arm problem here. Like, I think the ball's coming out just fine. I didn't see a lot of that. I agree. He was flexing his wrist. He just had wrist surgery. I don't know. It all seemed fine. I think what Joe Burrow has right now is a Mike Gesicki and Tanner Hudson and like Yoshivash problem. I think he's got a problem with the supporting cast more than he has a problem with, like, his own health. That is a real concern. Now they have an answer for that. They could build the whole damn thing out of Ja'Marr Chase. Like, Ja'Marr Chase only targeted 6 times in opening week and didn't seem thrilled about it. But also, Ja'Marr Chase has been out of the picture for a little while, so I get it.
Yeah.
Chase also has an incredible history against the Chiefs that includes one of the greatest individual receiving performances in NFL history, right? Like, he's been great against the Chiefs, and I think in 5 games has over 500 career yards and, like, 4 touchdowns, and did a lot of that work in one huge game years ago. So, like, there's an opportunity here for us to feel completely fine about both Burrow and Chase as we come out of this game. I'm assuming that T. Higgins doesn't play in this one, but maybe that would fix a lot. Like, if they, you know, I don't know how many total targets it was that went to Gesicki and Hudson and Irwin and the rest of that rogues gallery. But, you know, if we could feed a bunch of those to somebody of T. Higgins quality, that would sure help.
Yeah, that would be great. There's a new thing on fantasy Twitter, seemingly, where you get to victory lap week one usage, not even just week one results, but you get to victory lap week one usage. So while I'm making fun of that, I will also note that I said all offseason Ja'Marr Chase was going to pay more. Let me go ahead and do it here. All offseason, Ja'Marr Chase, I said, was going to play more snaps in the slot than at any point in his career. He comes out in week one, plays 43% of his snaps in the slot, or ran 43% of his routes from the slot. Yoshivas was like a pure outside receiver. And then they kind of rotated Trent Irwin and some of these other guys here and there. But I think that's really interesting for Chase's upside in this particular game, because I'm concerned about a lot with the Bengals right now, but I'm concerned about Trent Brown's performance, the right tackle in week one. Eventually Amarius Mims can take that job, but for now, Trent Brown is their starter. And that's going to just be the way it is. And, you know, the Chiefs looked as ferocious as ever up front. I think getting the ball in Chase's hands quickly is going to be a big part of this game plan. So I wouldn't be surprised. Hopefully they're high yield targets, but I wouldn't be surprised if, like you said, he gets fed a lot of gimmies and stuff like that. Yeah. Hopefully that doesn't turn into an 8 for 78 stat line. Although I guess for your fantasy team, you'd take that. You obviously want it to be more from a guy you probably took in the first round, but I expect that to be a big part of the game plan here. Like, I will be betting the over on Ja'Marr Chase's catches in week number 2. But your points, Andy, are really well taken about the rest of the supporting cast. Zach Moss looks like a big week one winner. I think if you got to start a running back from this backfield, it's definitely Zach Moss for now. Goal line work, 2-minute drill. But you know, we're used to the Bengals offense being, hey, let's dunk on people with our 3 good receivers.
Yes.
And now they've definitely got one receiver who just got there, and then an offseason hype bunny and Andre Yoshivas, Trent Irwin, who's like a role player, Mike Gesicki, who's Mike Gesicki. And then, like, we're not playing Jermaine Burton yet because we can't trust him because he's, you know, Jermaine Burton. So that's. And the Bengals offense was creative and interesting and unique and could form these little matchup issues when they had Jake Browning under center, but they didn't do it in week one with Joe Burrow under center, and they've never done it with Joe Burrow under center. So I don't know, man, that part makes me nervous about the ceiling for all these Bengals players until T. Higgins gets back there fully healthy, Ja'Marr Chase fully integrated. And then I'm sure they'll be fine, but it's a degree, a sliding scale of fine, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, while I'm super interested in this game, I also don't think that any version of the Bengals offense without Higgins is built to compete with Kansas City. And I know that Burrow obviously has a great history against Kansas City. I would just be shocked if that carries over to this game.
Final point before we move off this game. I just think it's important from a fantasy perspective to talk, because people have asked me about Joe Burrow. You know, this is a game where theoretically you want to start Joe Burrow, right? Because a high scoring game, theoretically, against a team that, you know, they used to call this stadium Dan Burrowhead a couple of years ago. Remember that? He beats the Chiefs. He's the only guy who can stand against Pat Mahomes, all this sort of stuff. We'll see about that. But from a fantasy perspective, Andy, and I'm sure that this won't get clipped for social and they won't post it, and then we will not get dunked on in a couple of days if this goes one way or the other. But Andy, Joe Burrow, is he a QB1 in fantasy football in week 2? And if he's not, who are some guys that you might play ahead of him?
Yeah, that's the thing. He's like right at that line. And there's a good chance that if you drafted Joe Burrow, you know, you didn't draft another quarterback. And I don't think you need to go out and find one. That said, am I interested in Jaden Daniels over Joe Burrow? Of course I am. Like, he, you know, huge rushing threat who ran the ball 16 times in week 1. I'd probably not go Baker Mayfield, but I'd think about it. You know, I don't think I'd be able to pull that trigger if Baker were available. But for the most part, I think you're kind of stuck in this Joe Burrow situation. You're hoping for volume and game script in this one. But we're not going to get the best possible version of Joe Burrow again until Higgins is back in the mix.
Yeah, I would probably play guys like Jaden Daniels and Matthew Stafford and Baker Mayfield and like Dak over Joe Burrow. Yeah. But once we get to the, and I'm not saying all those guys are available to you, but once we get to the, and definitely Jared Goff, that feels obvious to me. That definitely won't get dunked on. But once we get to like the Justin Fields zone of it all, then I think I'm giving Burrow one more shot here in week 2 and seeing what happens after that. And then on the recap show, Andy, we can revisit this whole Bengals offense situation. Hopefully we're feeling a lot better. Yes. Speaking of feeling better, buddy, I hope you're feeling a lot better about your Bears offense coming out of week 2. And shock, that's the final game you'd like to talk about. And in fairness to you, the other team in here, the Houston Texans, one of the marquee teams in fantasy, and this is a marquee game. It's on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, this is Bears Texans is actually a game with a bunch of locked in fantasy starters, right? So that's it's important just from that perspective. I think all year we're going to be watching the way the targets get distributed and snaps are and who's playing the snaps in the Texans receiving core. I think it all looked good in week 1, right? Like, you can feel good about any of those guys. You can feel obviously great about Diggs and Collins, and Tank Dell's usage was basically what it was last year. So I think that was all super encouraging. Not a lot of open questions there. Joe Mixon obviously was spectacular. Their Texans are basically a set it and forget it sort of fantasy roster unto themselves. On the Bears side, it won't shock you that I it was one of the first games that I rewatched of the week. And it's just funny because clearly Caleb Williams had a disappointing stat line, and there's a bunch of reasons to have been disappointed with the way the offense executed in week 1. But if you're a Bears fan and you've been watching Bears football for like decades, it was a little bit encouraging that, like, as you go back and watch the decisions that Caleb made, there's not a lot of times where you're like, oh yeah, other than, you know, he took the really deep sack that we talked about on Sunday, but like, you're never feeling bad about where the ball is going. And there are not instances where you're like, pull the trigger, man. You know, there's not instances where you're like, how do you not see this? You know, like, it felt like he saw everything. He overthrew a couple things, right? It was like an all-time what might have been day for Keenan Allen, who dropped a touchdown, and Caleb overshot him on a touchdown, and another potential touchdown was blown up by the interior pass rush of the Titans, which was pretty relentless all day, and maybe that's a concern on the Bears offensive line side that it isn't going to go away. But it wasn't like it wasn't a clean game, certainly, for Caleb, but it wasn't. It also wasn't a disaster game for a game that finished with like less than 100 passing yards. Not ideal. there still wasn't a lot in the decision making that made you panic. Now, the big thing here against the Texans, I'm not saying that I think the Bears can hang with the Texans, because I think the Texans can put up a crazy number against anybody. But the Bears are going to need Keenan at a minimum, right? Like, they, you know, Keenan Allen and Roma Dunze both missing the first practice session of the week. It doesn't seem like Roma Dunze is going to be able to go, but I'd be a little bit more hopeful with Keenan. If Keenan can go, and we've got DJ and Keenan Allen and the tight ends, like, can the Bears offense should be able to put up 20, 24, something like that against a Texans defense that, I don't know, again, in week one, they certainly showed some vulnerability. So I'm interested in how big a step the Bears offense can take. It's clearly going to take a step forward, because you can't really go back from where they were. It was, you know, the numbers are the numbers. They were pretty bad. And yet I don't think the tape was nearly as bad as the box score.
Yeah. And trying to find matchups and stuff like that against the Texans defense is a little difficult coming out of week one, because Anthony Richardson is such a unique quarterback.
Right.
Where I think almost all of his big plays came against zone coverage, which is unusual, because usually you're not out throwing the entire zone of the defense, even if it's theoretically open. Most quarterbacks are not and should not take that throw. Anthony Richardson can and will take that throw. Okay. So it's kind of hard to figure out exactly where Houston's weak. If they are weak and just where they're at defensively, I actually think this will be a good calibration game for both that defense and this offense. Mm-hmm. I will say that I think this offense needs a lot more DJ Moore, you know, first read looks. You know where I'm at with Keenan Allen as a player. Good, you know, still a good solid role player, but just not the same guy he used to be. I think we need to, okay, we were looking for explosive plays. Caleb's obviously hunting for explosive plays. We need to, DJ Moore had 8 targets overall, but a lot of those were like second reaction type plays. Mm-hmm. I need him like being the first read in the concept. And again, it's tough to say against Houston's defense, because your Bears are getting blown up in the interior offensive line by Simmons and Sweat, who they're really underrated good players for the Titans. I think that defense is on the rise after week one. But yeah, I don't know that Houston's more threatening on the edge with Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson. So how does that match up against Chicago? But like, what I'd love to see is just, and this is also a little bit of a Shane Waldron problem. I think Shane's a little bit on my radar after week one with we got a lot of like split out Gerald Everett. you got all these receivers and we're doing that. I don't know about that. So what I'd love to see is just Caleb back foot, hit it first read DJ Moore. Let's go get some yards after the catch. But the Texans have Derek Stingley, who's a really good corner. So maybe it is a lot more Keenan Allen here in week two.
Yeah. I will also say that none of this matters if it's, you know, if it's like Tyler Scott and all due respect to DeAndre Carter, right? Like if they don't have Keenan, it's a real problem, because then it's obviously much easier to deal with DJ Moore. I agree with you. Like everything worked to DJ Moore in week one. And those are the plays that looked the most like real NFL offense. No surprise that DJ Moore was great, but he was absolutely great.
Yeah. Very different game than the first two that we talked about where, it's all good on the Houston side, play all those dudes. Whereas Chicago, I think you got to kind of pick your spots a little bit going forward, and especially in this matchup. All right, Andy. Appreciate you, buddy. We will see you back on the show on Sunday night after the dust settles.
Yeah, you
that
will.
Should be pretty electric. Yeah, I mean, Andy, are you gonna actually come by the, or am I gonna have to monologue the Bears game by myself? Or are you gonna be too wasted?
If the Bears get a win, I'll drop in.
Okay, and if not, then I'll handle it myself. I think that's a good deal. That's a good compromise.
Either way, gonna be wasted. There. Yeah.
Well, okay. Then. Now I'm fingers crossed for a Bears win. All right, Andy, appreciate you, buddy. Again, we'll see you back here on the Sunday recap show. We're going to take a quick break. On the other side, Tara Roberts joins the show to discuss her make or break players for week two right after this. Joining me now is the one and only, my good friend, Tara Roberts. Tara, what's going on?
It was a rough week one, but I'm continuing positive. I'm your positive friend, Matt. Here we're thinking good vibes and bounce backs and everything that is going to be absolutely amazing this week. So, forgetting all that week one nonsense, and I'm feeling fantastic now.
What was so rough about your week one, Tara?
You know me, Matt. I might be a Drake London truther, and it was a rough week for my trutherism. So we need a bounce back here in the near future.
Well, I mean, listen, it's not Drake London's fault. I'll just say that, you know, we've talked enough about the damn Falcons. Honestly, we've talked about them so much all week. I don't even want to talk about them. I don't even want to think about them until Monday when we have to think about them. But I will give you credit, Tara Roberts. I believe, if not the first, one of the first times you were on the podcast this offseason, pre your official joining the Yahoo team here, you... when I was talking about the Jamison Williams bros, you were like, well, I might be one of those Jamison Williams bros, Mr. Route Chart Boy over here. And you were very positive on Jamison Williams. I was a little more skeptical, hopefully optimistic, but skeptical on Williams and just where he could be. I did a lot of talking about Jamison Williams all offseason, but I got to give you credit on that because you were definitely one of the more positive folks on Jamison out there. And I think coming out of week one, he's someone that's definitely on the rise. So listen, Tara, optimistic back to you here. You deserve some credit on the Jamison Williams call.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Seeing the good in me. Thank you, Matt.
That's what we're trying to do here. This is the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast is a known positive program. And on that note, let's move positively on to week two. Week one, shutting the books, hopefully getting better Drake London days, hopefully just moving forward with all kinds of good things. And let's do that. Let's talk about your make or break players for week two, Tara. If you missed the segment last week, folks, this is not necessarily a strict sit start, but we're trying to look at underlying situations, trying to find maybe some under the radar players or, you know, dare I say, even sleepers, everybody's favorite S word in the fantasy football streets. These make or break players are the guys that we're not quite sure about, but could end up being very good, valuable plays that make your fantasy team in week number two if you end up throwing them out there. We typically try to go for about five or six players in this segment. Tara, I love that you've just thrown out a trio of teammates here for your first selection to just try to swoop it all up here.
Yeah, you know, the LA Chargers. I think everyone at this point is back in love with J.K. Dobbins, and rightfully so. He looked amazing. We're super happy for him coming off of that injury, hoping that it sticks out. But I don't think he's the only Charger that is fantasy viable this week. Mm. And I think I'll start us off with the one that might feel the most odd because we are pro J.K. Dobbins in the production of him in this matchup. Very, very positive against the Carolina Panthers. But just because that J.K. Dobbins popped out and is appearing to be the RB1 here, I don't feel like that means that we have to write off Gus Edwards. So Gus Edwards is actually one of my potential make candidates this week. Presumed RB1 heading into week one, but only managed, you know, 11 carries, 26 yards. He was out-snapped. He was outperformed by Gus Edwards, or by J.K. Dobbins. And we expect it to be a committee. We expect Edwards to still see decent volume in this matchup because we have to kind of keep in mind here with J.K. Dobbins, they're not going to want to overwork him. I think he'll continue to be very productive with the touches that he gets, but throwing J.K. Dobbins out there and saying, we want you to get, we want 20 carries out of you. We want 25 carries out of you against this Charger, or against this Carolina Panthers defense. I just don't think that's the right route for them to go. I think that Harbaugh is smarter than that. So it'll still be enough volume there for Edwards to see a good 15 to 10 touches per game here. And this matchup, that's all you need, quite frankly, in order to exploit Carolina's defense there, allowed a whopping over 32 fantasy points to opposing running backs in week one. It was so bad that I kind of went through and out of curiosity, was looking at Alvin Kamara's yards per carry because it was extremely high. It was at 5.5 last week. And I had went back every single year looking at Alvin Kamara's average yards per carry for every single game. I had to go back all the way to 2020 to even find something that rivaled that amount, just to kind of make you aware of just how dramatic that level of output was for Alvin Kamara. Even Jamal Williams got in on the action there. So I think that we can absolutely utilize Gus Edwards as a flex in this situation because of the matchup here. So I'm feeling pro Gus Edwards as a make candidate here.
it's a definitely a Hail Mary call. I think most people honestly are probably closer to dropping Gus Edwards than starting him in week two, which I think, by the way, dropping Gus Edwards would be a mistake regardless of what happens here in week number two. Even if he doesn't, end up being a make player, Tara, even if the results isn't great, this is still a guy that has the trust of the coaching staff, a player that when you look at the red zone carries from last week, he actually had 3 red zone carries to 2 for J.K. Dobbins. Now, Dobbins got in a little closer inside the 10-yard line. He got the lone team carry there. But still, this is a guy who's going to get some carries down near the goal line. It's a team that I think is going to run the ball well. They obviously ran the ball with J.K. Dobbins. So regardless, he should be somebody that you should hold on your roster because we're going to get to these bye weeks eventually. We talked about that earlier in the show with Andy. Right now, we don't necessarily have to consider, so unless you're in a deeper league, and I'm in plenty of spots where I do have to cross my fingers and hope Gus Edwards can make it happen here. But for your typical home redraft league, start 2 wide receivers, start 2 running backs and a flex. You probably don't have to start these players just yet, but you're going to have to eventually. So you should hang on to them, for especially in a good rushing ecosystem. And Tara, I came away from week one not just feeling that the Chargers have a good rushing ecosystem. I know the passing performance wasn't necessarily great for the Chargers, but I'll talk a little bit about my thoughts about why I thought it was a little bit better than the stat line showed. But I want to hear why you like Justin Herbert and maybe one of his receivers here against Carolina as well.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, and I can't wait to hear what your opinion is on it, because it wasn't flashy, but it got the job done, and the most important thing to me is that it looked cohesive. No one looked out of place. I liked what I saw out of the entire receiving core as a whole. It was interesting to see Quentin Johnson involved. Am I trusting Quentin Johnson? He's not here. He's not on this list. We're not going that crazy here. We're sticking with Ladd McConkey on this one. But overall, what was asked of them, and especially given some of the underwhelming performances we saw from several offenses across the league that were integrating new players, no clear wide receiver one, new offensive coordinators, all that good stuff. I feel like the Chargers actually looked like one of the more competent overall teams against what is a decent defense over there in Vegas as well. So I was pretty encouraged. We knew that Herbert wasn't going to have extreme volume coming in. We know that this team wants to be run heavy, but that doesn't mean that he still can't be productive and provide fantasy value for us in good matchups. So again, we get to this Carolina matchup here, who was already suffering. We saw them absolutely get lit up by Derek Carr last week on, you know, very similar numbers in terms of volume. Carr wasn't out there chucking the ball, throwing the ball 30, 40 times. He was very efficient. And I think that's the kind of stat line that we could also see out of Justin Herbert this week. And Ladd McConkey stepping up immediately and kind of asserting himself as that wide receiver one, that primary look there, getting the touchdown. Although it wasn't a really high volume performance, I thought it was pretty encouraging, all things considered. They could have come out there looking a mess, and they looked like a nice, cohesive, efficient unit there. So when we're looking at this matchup here, I can see Justin Herbert having that same kind of script next week as that they had last week in terms of Derek Carr and the opportunity for him. And Ladd McConkey, I think, would be the main one to benefit here. So I like both of them in this matchup. If you're looking to stream, maybe you lost Jordan Love, you couldn't get your hands on a Baker Mayfield, you're scared to take a risk with Matt Stafford, given the offensive line situation that they've got going on over there, maybe you turn to the safety of Justin Herbert and say, do I think he's going to get high volume? No, but I think that he can have a nice, efficient week and absolutely give me a decent floor this week. So Ladd McConkey and Justin Herbert are two people I absolutely like this week.
Yeah, I thought Ladd looked great. He looked like just the type of player that I assumed he would be. I mean, his touchdown catch was sick. I think people really underrated his yards after catch and like broken tackle ability plays from a collegiate perspective when we were prospect scouting him. And I thought that was very underrated then. And I thought it showed itself immediately on that touchdown where he makes both safeties miss going into the end zone. You know, he ran the third most routes on the team. That's to be expected. They're going to want to get guys like Josh Palmer and Quentin Johnson out there because of the size that they present. But it's like, we're going to be over, people will overthink the, oh, 2 wide receiver set stuff with Ladd McConkey. Like, he's the best receiver. You highlighted it. It's all there for him. And for Herbert, what I was going to say about what I thought, you know, when you look at the stat line for Justin Herbert, it's like yards per attempt is low. Is this just another Justin Herbert, you know, kind of game? He really had to, you know, I think that offensive line has improved this year. The tackle play is good. Okay, Joe Alt is great in his first start against Max Crosby. Rashawn Slater's a dude. It's the interior that's still a little bit of a problem, Tara. They were able to disrupt that passing game on the interior with a lot of You know, the Raiders were rushing pretty heavy, and Herbert's just the type of guy that he's not going to take sacks. Good sack avoidance, had to get the ball out quick in a couple of times there. That's not going to be a problem against Carolina, who already did not have a good defense and then just lost their best interior rusher, too, in Derek Brown. So I think Herbert should have all the time in the world to give gamers a QB1 performance this week, maybe back half QB1.
Yeah. Completely agree on that one. I feel bad for Carolina at this point. It was bad enough, the defensive situation, to imagine that it's going to get even worse is very, 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 very shocking on that one, but it is.
You feel bad, but my bold prediction here, Tara, is that this is not the last time you're going to pick on Carolina in this make or break segment. So maybe you don't feel that bad. You know who's not feeling bad is Justin Fields, because he's probably going to be the Steelers quarterback as long as he can hold this job down, as long as he doesn't make any mistakes. And he's another player on your list for this week.
This one is kind of interesting. I feel like I'm going to make a little bit of an counterintuitive argument here, but I want y'all to go with me on this. Okay. Because Denver is another team that I like to pick on. I like to pick on them, not because of their secondary. Obviously, they're fantastic with Patrick Surtain, but you pick on them with the run game. You can absolutely light them up. Kenneth Walker, you know, it would have been even higher if he was able to finish out that fourth quarter last week. And then the year before, consistently, Denver has just absolutely struggled to stop the run. And I've seen nothing in the offseason that seems like that's really going to change. And we got a nice little preview of it last week. So when we're looking at Justin Fields, he's actually a make for me against the Broncos. And you would think you don't want quarterbacks as your makes against the Broncos because of the passing situation, but we're not looking at Justin Fields for the passing situation. We're looking at Justin Fields for the rushing upside that makes him a potential QB1 candidate here. And when I was looking at Justin Fields last week, I feel like we're getting a different version of him. Like last year when we got Justin Fields, you knew you were getting a boom game when he was getting a touchdown or two on the ground. All he needed was that one touchdown through the air. If we could get a little bit of high volume for him, have him chucking around, throwing it to DJ Moore, we knew that we were going to get one of those top 5 weeks. But looking at Justin Fields last week, he was very efficient. I just don't remember seeing many games where I could see a stat line for Justin Fields that he was 17 of 23 passes. 156 yards, not a ton there, but it was very efficient. So I feel like what they're looking out of Justin Fields this year from him is saying, we don't want you to do a lot. Utilize your upside on the ground, but when it comes to your arm, just kind of make the offense flow. We're going to rely on the run game. We are very competent in our run game. We're going to be run heavy. We're not asking a lot of you. He had a 73.9 completion percentage. That is dramatically different than his career average of around 60. So I feel like this is a whole new Justin Fields in the context of this Pittsburgh offense. So when we're looking at this matchup with Denver, we're going to have, decent efficiency through the air, but on the ground is where he's going to pop up. We had Geno Smith that had a nice little fantasy week there, and it wasn't through the air. It was through his legs on the ground. Had a touchdown there, 4 carries, about 30 yards or so. That kind of production is what I think we can see out of Justin Fields this week to push him into that QB1 category. So I'm looking at Fields as a make against Denver, not because of what he can do through the air. We're going to minimize that and have him have that production on the ground.
I like it. There's definitely at least one Superflex league where I lost Jordan Love and I got to play Justin Fields. So I buy what you're selling here simply because it fits my needs, but also because I'm with you that, look, it's the Falcons defense, and the Falcons, I don't think, are going to have one of the best defenses of this year. They do have two really good safeties in Justin Simmons and Jesse Bates. So like that, I think, and actually that leads me to my second point here, which is that Arthur Smith, the fantasy players hate him. They don't want to give it to him, Tara, but you got to hand it to him in week one. He was even talking about this in a press conference where it was his decision to not have Justin Fields attack the middle of the field. You know, I'm sure you've seen the passing charts getting memed to hell out there where, he's completely avoiding the middle of the field. Well, that's because, as Arthur Smith points out, they have Jesse Bates, who's a game wrecker, and avoiding that area of the field against this team is smart. And also, I would give Smith credit because Justin Fields and George Pickens are best attacking deep and outside the numbers, and that was where they hunted really big plays for George Pickens, was deep and outside the numbers. Now, overall, Justin Fields, only a 6.0 average depth of target. He threw to his first read on just about 79% of his passes, according to Fantasy Points data, which was the fourth most among quarterbacks in week one, but simplify the picture for Justin Fields. That's how you're going to get the best out of him. So I really like the setup and the approach of the offense in Pittsburgh in week one. My only hesitation about following you completely into the dark on this one, Tara, is just that the Broncos do have Pat Surtain, who, how is he not just going to track George Pickens around the field all day? And obviously, I think we can get there with Fields just as a rusher, but I think to get like a top 10 quarterback ceiling, we got to get some kind of passing volume here. And I'm just really unenthused by the rest of Pittsburgh's options here.
Yeah, I get the hesitation there. It hurts that there's no, you know, maybe that was what, you know, helped Geno a little bit there is, you know, it wasn't just the rushing upside. If they're locking down DK Metcalf, you don't have to worry about it. You can just turn to Tyler Lockett. You can just turn to Jaxon Smith-Njigba. It's not a problem. And Pittsburgh doesn't really have that secondary option yet, unfortunately, maybe in the future there. But I agree on that one. That one is the only little hesitation there. But other than that, loving what I'm seeing out of him. I think that I'll give Arthur Smith, I'll agree with you, and I'll give Arthur Smith a little bit of credit there. It pains me to do it because I got lifelong beef with that man. But maybe all the years of trying to figure out how to work with subpar quarterbacks has led him to see Justin Fields, you know, who is an upgrade over a guy like Desmond Ridder, and say, I can work with this a little bit. I can look at him and I can make him function within the context of what I want to do. So that makes a lot of sense.
All right. This is not the last time we're going to talk about this Steelers Broncos barn burner in this segment here, Tara, including your next player who's on the other side of the field.
Yes, we're going to stop being super positive here, and we're going to get, unfortunately, a little bit negative here regarding Javonte Williams. This was the problem that I kind of foresaw coming into the season. He was someone who I wanted no piece of for the fact that I just did not think that he would hold on to this backfield, and it happened super quick here is the problem. Mm-hmm. And losing your – and, you know, committees can work. Committees can work in certain situations. You can be productive. I already, you know, said that despite the fact that J.K. Dobbins is the clear RB1 in that backfield, I'm still interested in Gus Edwards in this offense, in this situation, in this matchup. But those are two different situations where their run game can be productive. Unfortunately, this Denver run game, I have zero faith that it can actually be productive. So we've got Jaleel McLaughlin kind of outpacing Javonte Williams here in terms of, you know, the upside in terms of receptions, snap outpacing him as well. But on top of that, you're being outpaced in a situation where no one is being productive. That's a major problem. They had a shocking low amount of fantasy points produced from that entire backfield. In terms of PPR, they had about 12 fantasy points between the entire group. They were just absolutely horrific. And when you consider the fact that they had middle of the road carries, 20 carries between the group as a whole, it wasn't like it was a low volume day and there was no run game there and they just were out there chucking it. That wasn't the case. They still were decently committed to the ground game. They just couldn't be productive out of it. And I have a bad feeling when we're looking at this offense as a whole and we're looking at Bo Nix and the adjustments that he needs to make throughout the season, and defenses will obviously be saying, okay, why do we need the, you know, we don't need to stack the box, or we can stack the box because we can just say, hey, Bo Nix, you know, you figure it out. You test us. Can you win a game on your own? And if that's the case and the run game is going to be a struggle here and Javonte Williams is now getting a lesser chunk of this committee backfield, I am highly concerned with him. And on top of that, I don't like the matchup here, unfortunately.
Right.
We reverse it around. Denver is a fantastic matchup for running backs. The same is not the case for Pittsburgh, unfortunately. So we've got a bad matchup, an unproductive backfield, a quarterback, rookie quarterback that is struggling to find himself here, and a situation where Javonte Williams seems to have lost any kind of receiving upside and is potentially just lost his position as the lead back in this committee. That is all a recipe for a disaster that I want zero part of for Javonte Williams. I just can't see any upside in the scenario for him.
Oof. I mean, that was Tara, that's about as damning as I've ever heard you on a player. So that says something.
I'm sorry, Javonte.
I know. I feel bad for old Javonte too. But listen, like brass tacks, fantasy football, you want to keep it real simple. We don't really love players on bad teams. We definitely don't love split backfields on bad teams. And I think that's where Javonte Williams finds himself. You know, before the season on Football 301, I said that the Broncos were going to be they had a good chance to be the 32nd offense in the NFL this year, dead last. And what I saw in week one did not change my mind at all. In fact, I think it like hardened that stance. And I'll say one last thing. We don't have to linger on this because, you know, we'll keep it moving here, but Sean Payton on my radar a little bit. I don't think they have great players. I think they got receivers who can't separate. They have a bunch of dudes in the running back position and a rookie quarterback who was probably overdrafted. I just think what they're doing, Tara, from a schematic standpoint, I find it to be very uninspired, and I find it to be very, I don't know, like mid-2000s ish. I don't know what they're doing right now. Like these big protection plays and getting two dudes out there trying to take, you need more options to put defenders in conflict right now. And they don't have enough guys out in the routes. They don't have enough guys who are even good at the receiver position. So pretty problematic stuff. I'm willing to be wrong about this. I'm willing to see how it plays out this year, but the Broncos are very much on my radar in terms of how much is Sean Payton actually kept up with the modern NFL. That I am very skeptical about. I'm also, to be honest with you, Tara, a little skeptical about your next pick here, if you're going to talk a little positive about this one. But I'm interested to see what you have to say about Jaguars wide receiver Christian Kirk against the Browns.
I wish I could keep it a mystery here, but I don't know if I can hold it out that long. Because one of my make players from last week was Brian Thomas. So unfortunately, I think I already kind of bagged on Christian Kirk last week. But, you know... The problem with Christian Kirk is that I don't want us to overreact on him. So this is why he's still kind of borderline for me. I don't want us to overreact and just completely write him off, because we have seen him be productive in an offense where he technically wasn't the alpha. Calvin Ridley was the alpha last year, and Christian Kirk was still a viable fantasy asset. So as we see more increase in production from Trevor Lawrence, because last week was kind of like a surprisingly low volume game. Maybe I underestimated Miami's defense a little bit, but I expected a little bit more volume out of that. And so it's not kind of surprising that Kirk had a massive dud of a game there. And maybe better days are coming ahead. But when we're looking at this week specifically, and the fact that he has already been outpaced and outperformed by Brian Thomas, and between him and Gabe Davis and Christian Kirk is the one with the lowest snap count, unfortunately. And I think that that's going to continue to possibly decrease a little bit as they continue to increase the presence of Brian Thomas within that offense. He's already outpacing him, so that's a major problem right off the bat. But he just looked like the alpha in that offense, and Kirk kind of looked like a secondary player that is never going to be the first look in this offense, unfortunately. So when we're taking that, and then we're now putting it up against a tough Broncos defense, while I can potentially see better days ahead and don't want to drop Christian Kirk and kick him to the curb, this is absolutely not a week where I can take that risk of putting him into a starting lineup, because I don't think this is going to be a high volume pass game either. You're not the first look. The productivity is going to be very, very risky here, and I'm not willing to take that risk with Kirk this week, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't want to be dropping Christian Kirk yet, but he's somebody that's going to be tough to trust once we get to those bye weeks, if we don't see something different, because I think what we saw in week one was, you know, pretty troubling. I think that they're going to try to have Kirk be more of a vertical slot receiver now that Evan Ingram and him are, when they're on the field together, because Ingram last year produced a ton when Kirk was out, because it was just like, we're taking those gimme looks that we gave to slot receiver Christian Kirk and we're giving them to Evan Ingram. Ingram's not going to totally go away. So to find more use for Kirk, they're going to have to try to use him a little more downfield. That's going to lead to some volatility on a low volume offense with an ascending rookie. Cause man, I'm trying not to get too over my skis here, Tara, with old Brian Thomas, but he looks awesome. Looked great in week one. He's looked great all preseason. I'll admit that I thought that he was somebody that might take a minute to develop in the NFL. He's outkicked my expectations. Liked him as a prospect, but he certainly looked more ready to rock from day one. So I'm with you. I certainly do not want to play Kirk this week. But yeah, another tough performance from him is going to be, I don't know, it's going to be tough to like hang on to him through once we start getting waivers and like we got to have bye week players and all that stuff. So I'm hoping to not play him this week, but maybe see something better this week, Tara, like from an underlying metric standpoint.
Yeah, that would be great. A little something. I don't know if we can expect something high out of him in terms of fantasy production, but something encouraging to let us know that he's heading in a positive direction.
All right, Tara, let's land this plane. Let's bring it home with a couple flex players that the people need. So let's toss it to our keys to winning, presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And for week two, our key to winning is picking guys that are going to make the difference in your flex spot. So we want you, need you, to get the win this week. Okay, Tara, the people got the win last week. Let's get them another one this week. Obviously, if they're listening to this show, they definitely didn't lose week one. I definitely didn't lose week one for sure. So Tara, give me the name of one player the fantasy managers might be debating starting this week, putting in that final starting flex spot, but are actually worth it, and they got to get them in their lineup this week.
You know, I was actually debating a lot here as well. And spoiler alert, I was debating between the guy that you chose for your start of the week. Yeah, so I'm with you on that one. But Tony Pollard is the one that I turned to. This was, you know, in preseason, we saw a different level of Tony Pollard. He looked like the Tony Pollard of, you know, 2022, the Tony Pollard that was explosive, the Tony Pollard that would have these big plays and high production, receiving upside. He looked like the guy that we were drafting as an RB1 last year and had faith in. And so when I look at him in that offense, and I know we got the news that they want to maybe split carries a little bit more evenly, but I kind of wonder if we're reading into that in the wrong way. I want us to lean into Pollard this week based off what he did last week, but also lean into Pollard because they're going to lean into this run game. The Titans are. I love Will Levis. I do. I want the best for him, but I don't think there is a scenario where they want to continue to see Will Levis throw the ball 30 plus times. And for that reason, I think that even if they increase the volume of Tajay Spears, Pollard is still going to be the RB1 with plenty of volume in this offense. And when we're looking at this matchup against this matchup here, I think that they're going to want to aggressively rely on the ground game, especially in this matchup. You don't want to attack through the air. If they rely on this ground game and push, they could see, you know, a decent amount of volume from him, maybe a couple of goal line opportunities here. And Pollard will continue to have strong production, very worthy of a flex spot here.
I like that call. I'm also going to go with a running back sort of in this same range, and I'll go with Najee Harris, Pittsburgh Steelers running back. You mentioned it earlier, Tara, in the podcast that the Broncos struggle to defend the run. They gave up over 100 yards to Kenneth Walker last week, and they gave up a 34-yard rushing touchdown to Geno Smith. If they struggle to deal with the Seahawks run game, who, you know, have a troubling offensive line and a quarterback in Geno Smith who can move around but is not Justin Fields, what are they going to do against said Justin Fields and that Pittsburgh offensive line and their RB1, which coming out of week one does look like Najee Harris? Like, I like Jaylen Warren. He's coming off an injury, so that's important context to remember here. But nevertheless, in week one, 20 carries of the 41 team carries that the Pittsburgh 41 team carries. My God, Arthur Smith is in a fever dream right now. 20 of the carries of the 41 total for the Pittsburgh Steelers went to Najee Harris. That was almost 50%. He had two targets in the passing game as well. He had 38 snaps, by far led the backfield, even if Cordarrelle Patterson snuck in there a little bit. So I think if you're looking to break ties in favor of some of these running backs, like, I like the Tony Pollard call. I think that Najee Harris is probably a guy that should be in your RB2 range for fantasy rankings this week. Definitely somebody I am trying to get in my lineup. All right, Tara, we've said it all. We've done it all. Make or break players handed out. Picked on the Carolina Panthers. Talked up Arthur Smith. I mean, you're flying right now, Tara Roberts. I appreciate you doing this.
Anytime. Always flying close to the sun.
Hey, that's how we do it here on the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. What a show. What a week we have ahead of us. Thanks again to Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. Next time you hear me, week two, Sunday, will be in the books, and Andy Behrens will be right back here. That's right, Andy, back to work, buddy. Right back on this show. Joining me to break it all down, his Bears on Sunday night. Will we see Andy back on the show? How many drinks will he have if he's back on the show? Who knows? Until then, we're out.